You know, we're about to start a new Star Wars show, but before that, we do need to look back at 2024.
Did you make a 2024 replay?
Spotify has a Wrapped for the podcast.
Oh my gosh.
And right, the first thing I have up here is top episode was Star Wars The Acolyte, our first episode on The Acolyte, with 7 streams on Spotify at least. It was streamed 133% more than your average episode. Ever wondered who your audience is? Yeah, we know him. His name's Caleb.
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Animation. Whatever else. Rebels. Robots. And etc.
Let's break it down. Listeners by age.
My mom dropped off the face of the earth listening to our podcast like 6 months ago.
18 to 24, 25%. 25 to 29, 38%. 30 to 34, 25%. 45 to 54, 12%. Who's in that age range? Our middle-aged listeners, rise up and let us know who you are.
My mom. I'm kidding.
Listeners ages 30 to 34 grew the most by 100%. We had a 100% increase in the demographic of 30 to 34. Oh boy. Neither of us are 30 yet. I don't know who that is.
Oh gosh. Maybe my coworkers. They always kind of mention sometimes they're going to. I might know. Sometimes I plug this to my random friend groups and they actually pull it up. And then they are immediately turned off by the length of episodes. Oh my gosh.
In 2024, your show traveled the globe. You were streamed in 4 countries. Okay, so obviously U.S. Ireland. What did we talk about previously? Ireland, China.
Singapore?
No. I can't remember. Let's see if it tells me. United States was your top country.
Whoa! USA!
Your youngest listeners are from the United States. This is incredibly unhelpful. And your oldest are from Australia.
Our youngest is actually probably the 9-year-old in the room with us, our editor. She's that demographic.
So apparently the 45 to 50-year-olds are from Australia. So welcome, middle-aged Australians.
Good day, mates.
Well, now you've just alienated the entire Australian fan base.
All 7 people. In the country.
Here's some other shows that our listeners love. I have never heard of these. Oh, I've heard of one. Oh no, this is, I'm blaming Caleb. I'm calling you out for what number 3 is. I don't know about these other two.
Read them to me or not?
Dr. John Delaney show. Delaney, D-E-L-O-N-A-Y. I have no idea. Jack Matt's Happy Hour. Don't know what that is. Number 3, The Ben Shapiro Show. Thanks, Caleb. Gosh, The Fellas Podcast and Duolingo Spanish Podcast. Well, hola. Okay, you can really see that Caleb's influencing this a lot. What our listeners also listen to. Number 1, Indie Christian. Number 2, CCM. Do you know what that is? I don't know what that is. Do you know?
No.
Contemporary Christian music.
Oh.
Pop punk. This got Caleb written all over it. Audiobook genres. Number 1, only history. Your fans have entered the conversation. Our ratings.
Shut up.
This is our conversation. It's our podcast.
This is our conversation.
It's Starformers night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots episode. I don't know what number it is. I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and...
Transformers.
And whatever else we both want to talk about. This is a Star Wars episode. We are so back. It's Skeleton Crew. We're finally here. First 2 episodes. We'll be getting around to it. Before we do that, Rachel wants to do her...
I have news.
I am working backwards.
Oh, okay.
I'm giving the topic, the pre-topic segment, and then I'll introduce the news. Wow. All disrespect. I mean, I guess we're still celebrating Hatesgivings, which I don't know how we didn't come up with that name while we were recording. Part of it was I didn't know that it would take me a week to edit that episode, and I wouldn't put it out until the day before Thanksgiving. I was like, oh, hate's giving. Perfect.
So Cameron texted me and goes, hey, can you send me the list of things you don't like? Probably less than 24 hours after I'd cleared out my entire cache of notes, going, I don't need this anymore. And not even just deleting them, going into the recently deleted folder and deleting them further. So they are gone forever.
Well, joke's on you. I have a note. I have every note saved from every 68, 70 episodes we have so far, somewhere in that range of 69. Episodes. So you're going to talk about your Spotify Wrapped. Not as if
it's actually my Apple Replay, which is the superior music listening app.
As if you didn't spend enough time on it a month ago. We're going to get it again.
This is my annual.
Okay. So, but before that, as always, news and recent thoughts. Rachel, what do you have for us?
Star Wars Hunters is coming to PC.
That I did not see that. That's what I would want to know. Can I transfer my account from my phone to my computer? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
Because I really enjoyed that game a lot, and I would love to get back into it. I got to play like one match while I was waiting in Kohl's for Allison to try on some clothes last week.
No privacy for her. Dang.
What do you... I was not in the room with her. I was not in the... okay, this is... Athena, cut all this out. This is totally unnecessary. If you're hearing this, it's because Athena did not do her job. Yeah, so PC. I like to try on a PC because it's... I like the game quite a bit. At the lane, it's a lot of fun. It is kind of tricky on mobile because you have a small screen. It's touch screen. I think they've designed it as well as they can for small screen mobile, but I would love to have a try it with a mouse and keyboard. So cool. Yeah, good game. Fun game. I jumped on for the first time since the first. So they do it like it's kind of the modern like ongoing multiplayer game. They have seasons, and every season they add a new character. I had not jumped on since the previous season ended. They added an Ewok who drives around in a small AT-ST.
Oh.
They added a Dathomirian woman who has a crossbow. And they added a, I think we may have talked about this, a K2 droid, which is pretty fun. He's got like two big shields on his arms. Yeah, so.
Godzilla's also coming to Fortnite.
Oh, jeez.
I'm dead serious. If I had a nickel for each thing we've talked about that has been in Fortnite, Transformers are in Fortnite, too.
I'm sure Star Wars is. And
it is. Oh, yeah, because that's how the Rise of Skywalker announced Palpatine's speech between movies through a Fortnite event.
So do you get to play as Godzilla? Is he a skin, or is he like a big thing that you fight?
I believe he's a skin.
Huh. I'm looking. They've actually done a decent job. He's a little too vertical for my taste, but they've not done a terrible
Which
job
means
of mapping
you can make
him on.
Emote.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. what else you got?
So, if you haven't been listening to the podcast, which is a lot of people, you've heard me talk about how I like to collect those Art of books.
Yeah. Yes.
And I've asked multiple times if we're going to get one for Transformers 1. This image circulated on Twitter with a book, The Art of Transformers 1. However, it comes with a note from Josh Cooley, the director, and so they said this book was actually given as a promo to the people who worked on the film. However, which makes it, you know, you're like, oh, so you're going to keep it exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
However... Jason, I think Shear, who is the production designer for Transformers 1, confirmed on Twitter that we will be getting an art book officially. So
I'm very happy for you, Rachel.
For the one other person in the world that cares about that, we have something to look forward to.
Very good.
This
is not news, but an interesting little tidbit. I was watching the film Monty Python's Life of Brian, which is a comedy about a man living in the early first century. And I re-figured out as I was scrolling through IMDb, the actor Kenneth Kaloi is in the movie. He played Admiral Piette in the original trilogy, one of the main Imperial officers. Do you want to take any sort of shot about like what historical figure he might play in Life of Brian if it's first century?
Did they make him Jesus?
He plays Jesus.
Oh, gosh.
It's a very small part. It's like one scene, and it's while he's doing the Sermon on the Mount, and he's in the distance. You barely see him, and you barely hear him. But just the fact that Admiral Piet played Jesus is just historical to me. Hysterical to me. That's all I have.
I have picked up an item off the table.
Oh, yes. So this is what we teased at the end of last episode.
So if you know me, I like to spend money. And sometimes companies do collaborations with Hasbro. And so in honor of Transformers 1, Hasbro came out with Transformers merchant. No, sorry. Did you know Hasbro has Transformers merchandise?
Whoa.
Hasbro collaborated with Converse to come out with custom Converse merchandise. So, me going, I have money, bought custom Converse high tops. And just go to the website and click around, because they have some, they have a couple different characters to choose from. You can have Optimus Prime, Rodimus Prime, Bumblebee, and then for the Decepticons, you have Starscream, Soundwave, Megatron, you know, kind of the big threes. But you can design through various colors from like red, gray, like yellow, purple. And so I customed mine and they're not matching. So on the left Converse, I'm watching Cameron's eyes glaze over.
Uh-huh.
I got Rodimus on one side and you can get words as well. I got Robots in Disguise in the rubber part. And you have this cool kind of Cybertron style design
mm-hmm.
on the other side. And on the other one, I have Optimus Prime in the same Cybertron design. So big fan.
They look good. They're a good look. They're a fun look.
They're aggressively 80s. Like I got this and I was like, man, am I Marty McFly? which is very 80s Converse and Transformers G1.
They're a good look. I think you'll be the talk of the office when you wear them to work someday.
Thanks. So anyways, moving on to the superior music listening platform. The annual Apple Replay also came out today. And so I was just going to talk about some of the top songs and albums that were on my 2024 replay, which I thought was kind of funny. Cameron already knows a little bit of my top artist, which, and my top song and my top album, which were all the same artist, which I'm not going to talk about because it's not podcast related. But my top five song of the whole year is Hyperspace Jump from Ahsoka.
That's great. That's that album
from Ahsoka.
Because of you, that album is in my top albums for the year.
Nice. It is followed by Kung Fu Panda's 4. Or Kung Fu Panda 4's, it's pronounced Skadoosh at number 6. We then have Eulogy from Andor at number 7, which came out over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've
got Hans Zimmer, slightly related, because we've talked to him about him on the podcast, so he is podcast canon.
He's podcast
ready. He's my third for the year.
My 11th song is I'm the Dragon Warrior from Kung Fu Panda 4. And then my 15th song, because they cap at 15, is Divine from Godzilla Minus One.
Very nice. I really need to go back and listen to that soundtrack.
Yes, you do. I think it is very funny because it also gives you kind of monthly top artists. And some of my monthly top artists were Kevin Kiner, Nicholas Britell, Hans Zimmer twice. And then the other actual 8 months were all an entirely different band.
It's very good. Andor is actually my fifth album. Ahsoka was 3, Andor was 5.
My albums, my second album was the Hans Zimmer live concert from this year.
Very good.
My fourth top album, Godzilla Minus One. My nice. Fifth top album, Kung Fu Panda 4. My sixth album is Godzilla King of the Monsters soundtrack, which came out 5 years ago.
Hey, man, if it's good, it's good. It becomes timeless.
And then the last one related to the podcast is coming in at number 12 out of 15, the Transformers 1 soundtrack, which is pretty impressive that it sure. made it onto my replay, considering yeah. it had 2 months to do
That's
so.
That's so true. That's so true. I mean, it really had a fourth quarter play there.
You know who doesn't have fourth quarter plays? My preferred NFL team.
Outside the purview of this podcast. I guess. Very nice. Anything else to share
about that? That was it. I just thought That's it was fun. I just think it's funny that the King of the Monsters soundtrack is still in it's in the top 10 too. If it hadn't been for this specific album that you guys don't get to see, uh-huh. I would have had an entirely different Wrapped, but this uh-huh. this album just like grabbed me by the neck and strangled me for 6 months straight.
Well, cool. Well, I mean, I think that means that it's time to move on to this week's topic.
The Uncle first, Owen and Aunt Beru.
The newest Disney Plus live action show, Ahsoka. Now, why did I say Ahsoka? I was sitting here talking about Ahsoka.
They did just announce that's now available for Steelbook purchase.
Oh, Blu-ray. Yeah.
I did put the Andor one on the Andor Steelbook on my Christmas list. Mom, if you're uh-huh. listening, she knows. I also put Godzilla Minus One on my list, too. If anyone wants to buy it for me, family who's listening, aka my mom.
You said she doesn't listen anymore.
She does have access to my list, though.
So, Skeleton Crew, new Star Wars show taking place sometime after episode 6 on the what we learn is a mysterious planet called Atten.
I think it's AT-AT-N.
Yeah, or it's the Twitter. It's a planet created by Twitter.
Named after one of Elon Musk's kids.
they can be at and we're podcasting. That's us. Casting. So it is about a four young, you know, 10 to 11 year old ish on this planet of
miners.
Yes. You got the main young boy, his name is Wim. He reads about Jedi. He plays with Jedi toys. He wants to be a Jedi.
Same.
So we pretty much just have Rey again to some degree, at least how Rey was in Force Awakens. We have
any average child.
We have a blue elephant boy named Newell. No, but he is not what?
He's the same species as Max Rebo.
I was about to say, is he? I don't think so. That I want to figure
What's
that out.
What's his name?
Newell, N-E-W-L. It auto-corrected to New Star Wars. man, it is not. Does he not have a Wikipedia page yet? I thought this would be a lot easier to look up.
He is not an Ortolan. Christopher Ford has clarified he is a member, that Neil is a member of an original species.
Oh, it's Neil. That's, I, my phone auto-corrected to, or I just simply misspelled the wrong word. Neil, that sounds way better. Though also sounds a lot more common. This says that the show is taking place around 9 ABY, which means it's 9 years after episode 4, which means it's like roughly 4 years after.
Episode 4?
Yeah.
You mean episode 6?
No, 9 ABY, after the Battle of Yavin, which means it's 9 years after episode 4. Battle of Yavin is episode 4.
Yes, well, but so 9 years... There's not a 9-year gap between 4 and 6.
No. So
So why are you looking at me weird when I said it should be after 6?
It's 9 years after episode 4.
Yes. So it should also be like sometime four, post yeah. Return of the Jedi.
You
too.
Said I thought you said don't you mean after episode 4? Episode 6. That I said it is around 9 years after
yes,
ABY,
which I thought it was weird that you would pick the beginning of the trilogy.
That is the years they give. That is the I don't. It doesn't give me the years after episode 6. It gives me the years after episode 4. That's all I have. All I have is the numbers they give me. That is the given time of timeline, given like year increments. Now, how many years after is episode 6? Because I don't know how many years episode 6 is after episode 4. I think it's 3 years. So it's probably 3 years. It's probably it's either 3 or 4 years between 5 and 7.
Four years for ABY. So it's 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
There you go. And I'm trying to find his species, if it has it.
I don't...
descriptive information. Species. Neil's species.
Yeah.
So it's not been named. So he's not the same as Max Rebo. So there's two different blue elephant species in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Minimum. So those are the two main boys, and there's a pair of girls who are friends. And their name is Fern, who mom is some sort of superintendent, some sort of, or like, she has like some sort of title like that in the city, in the school system. I'm not sure what she is. Some sort of politician or bureaucrat. And she's somewhat rebellious. She likes to drive around in her hover bike and be reckless and whatnot. And her best friend is named KB. It's unclear. We do not see anything else about her. We don't know if she is an actual cyborg, kind of like Lobot.
She's just got like modifications.
Yeah, or she's just like, I feel like the show's
kind of... She's one of the mods from Book of Boba Fett.
That would be very odd to me for someone that young to be like that, unless they were born with some sort of issue.
Maybe it's just like the same equivalent when you like pierce infants' ears.
Interesting. But I could also foresee it coming down the line that like she takes it all off at some point, and none of it is like she wants people to think she's a cyborg. I feel like this show is going to kind of play into like adolescent. It kind of feels like all these characters are kind of like putting up a front, other than Neil. Neil's kind of your typical sidekick best friend who's like very innocent but also very pure. Whereas Wim, Fern, and KB strike me as like adolescent people who are starting to go through puberty, who are trying to find their identity. Wim wants to be a Jedi. Fern wants to be like a rebel slash like freedom fighter. And KB, I get the sense she wants to be like less human. I mean, she might just be. She might just be a cyborg person. But I could totally foresee later in the show.
Look cool.
I mean, that's also very possible. She has this visor up a lot. But like, for example, she has the visor off. And she's like looking at these like little creatures later in the show, and she's really amazed by it. And then she gets scared, and she immediately puts the visor down. It kind of feels like this defense mechanism, whether it is biologically part of her or not. We also have SM-33, who is their droid companion, who we'll discuss in a minute. And then an unnamed, as of yet, pirate slash Jedi played by Jude Law.
Jude Law.
One of my boys. So the four young people we describe, they live on this planet at Atten.
It seems very idyllic, but also very structured. Mm-hmm. It feels very communist.
Well, you commented on the structure, like this. We start in like the suburbs,
very Eastern. Like once you get more into the city towards the school, it feels like very Eastern European, like architecture.
And no, I am realizing, looking at my plot summary, we did skip something. It starts with a pirate raid.
Oh yes, with a masked man being mutinied by his crew because he leads them on a raid, and they break into the vault, and there is one singular credit.
And the man who leads the mutiny that we later see has become the captain of the ship is a wolf man
named Brutus.
And it is, and we see various other aliens, a lot of very high level practical effects. Like, as opposed to like someone like Neil, for example, who's an elephant boy, who is a practical effect, but oftentimes his mouth will be CGI.
Yeah, there are some times where I was like, that's CGI.
A lot of the Wolfman is just pure practical
effects. There are a lot of practical aliens in this movie, or show.
And like, I guess what the difference is, I very much remember one of the very first promotional bits of footage they did for like Force Awakens was J.J. Abrams with this like very cool looking practical alien. But this alien was later just in the background. I feel like there was a, like, that's always been a big selling point that they've tried to push for the new Star Wars, is this emphasis on practical effects. But I'm now realizing a lot of the time those practical effects were very much background. which is still great, which still makes the world feel real, but it oftentimes any sort of like front-facing alien was oftentimes still CGI or heavily CGI augmented, and honestly not that many aliens. This show, on the other hand, like half the classroom is practical aliens. We have a lot of like close-ups of practical aliens, mm-hmm. because it, like, if you have a practical alien but they're not close-up, they don't really need to be like articulate in their face or anything. When they are cutting these close-ups of these various puppets and or people in costumes, they have articulate faces, and it just, it's another level, and it's probably the best thing about the show so far, in my opinion. But so we had the mutiny. We don't technically see who the captain is, but it's pretty obviously Jude Law's character, yeah. who we meet at the very end of episode 2. Then we cut to the suburbs. Wim's dad works too much. Do you remember what he said his dad does?
He's a surveyor?
I don't specifically remember.
He works in a factory. It is very... so they're definitely influenced by the New Republic. I'm fairly certain it's mentioned, but they... The main, like, thing that the kids are preparing for is their placement tests.
Yes.
And they're, like, 11, and depending on what they score on the placement test is what's going to basically define their work for the rest of their life on this planet. They call it the great work, right?
That's actually a good point. So there's, to kind of skip ahead, spoil a little bit to make this conversation a little easier, once they leave the planet, we figure out Atten is a... like mythical legendary planet that people don't think exists. It's kind of like Treasure Planet. It's supposedly this place that doesn't exist is full of treasure, which retroactively, I'm glad you mentioned the great work thing, 'cause I kind of forgot about that. What the heck does that mean? A lot of the way they present this planet, we're kind of used to things in Star Wars not making sense. Like, they'll mention a cultural event or a job title, and like, oh, I don't know exactly what that means, but I can like intuit. I can project my life or my society onto this planet and guess what they mean by that. The great work, I just kind of assumed was what they described as just like working.
It's their bureaucracy, I think. It's their...
Well, maybe not. I mean, there's a lot we don't know about this planet. The great work could be that they are... Why is this planet... Like, there's a lot we don't know that we can't even answer. Why is this planet missing? Why is no one allowed to leave or come? Why is it supposedly full of treasure? That could connect to whatever this great work is. Are they looking for something? Are they researching something? Mm-hmm. That is to say, what I think is kind of clever about this is that the first episode gives you a lot of information without actually giving you information. You take that for granted. You just kind of just skim past it and you don't really ask questions. Because like, oh, it's Star Wars. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this planet. We know... You know, when we hyperspace away at the end of the first episode, we're like, oh, we're kind of done with Atten. Atten doesn't really matter anymore. Well,
we get to the second one.
It suddenly is a lot important. So that first episode retroactively is actually potentially laying the groundwork for a lot of what the show will actually be about.
The first episode essentially boils down to meeting our main cast of kids.
Yes.
And Wim finds what he thinks is a buried Jedi temple in a restricted area of Atten, which I also thought was quite interesting. The woods were restricted.
Yes.
And so he tells Neil that they're going to go dig it up. He gets in trouble for being truant because he was late to class, the placement test. That's how he finds it. KB and Fern overhear, and they show up at the same time. It's very typical 80s boys versus girls banter.
Yes.
Excuse me. And so they manage to get into... the structure only to find out it's actually a ship. It's not actually a Jedi temple. It's a ship, and everyone's like, don't touch anything, except for Wim, who's like, yeah, I'm gonna start touching buttons. They find what you could call a skeleton crew. There are dead bodies in the ship.
Fill in a few slots that we missed. Fern's mom is the undersecretary, whatever that means.
She is the same. I for some reason, she looked different in both. It was the clothing, but I was
kind of having... I could be wrong, but I'm pretty certain that is her mom. Too.
But I was just sticking with the plot really quick.
Yeah, I just... and Fern... Not Fern, sorry. Wim's dad is a... Oh, sorry. I thought I had it. Systems coordinator.
Okay.
Anyways.
So, you know, the ship actually seals them inside. So they're trying to find a way out. And they manage to start power again to the ship. Wim presses a button and it activates the ship in its entirety, like on autopilot. Mm-hmm. And it just full sends out of the atmosphere. And
very nearly kills the kids because they're trying to get out and the ship flips upside up. Yeah. And they nearly fall out and...
And it jumps into hyperspace and basically, yeah, and that's kind of where it ends. We've kind of talked about this, no one can get in or out. I noticed there's a scene where the dad is returning from home when before he finds out Wim snuck out to go find that, quote unquote, Jedi temple. It's a shot of the sky and there's a red flashing gridlock over the entirety of the sky. And so when the kids are leaving, they're like, oh my gosh, the barrier. Like, we're going to freak out. Well, they get actually past the barrier with...
Yeah, no problem.
No problem. Unless it damaged the ship and I just didn't catch
that. Well, I guess... two questions. Either the ship is like a pirate ship that can sneak past shields or something, or the barrier is a lie.
Yeah, it's one of the two. For visual threats. So that's basically like the first episode we get our introduction to the punky little kids.
Yeah, a couple notes about the first episode. I don't want to be too negative. I thought it was fine, but I think my main takeaways were mostly negative. First thought, I think to go just quickly back to what you just said about the scene where the kids were almost falling out of the ship. I think that concerns me for the whole show because that sequence theoretically should work, but did not land for me. So they're all like, Wim is falling out of the ship. The other three kids have his arm and they're trying to pull him up. And it just never felt like those kids were in that environment.
I think also what didn't help that scene is the dad.
Sure.
The dad like comes upon them as the ship is lifting out. Uh-huh. And he's like not. So the dad is supposed to be reacting to watching his son being whisked away in an unknown ship.
Yeah.
And he's just like.
He's like, not reacting accordingly.
Very surface level. Mm-hmm. Like
the whole performance is, and you know what? I mean, I think this is the trickiness. This happens with almost every streaming show is you get the first few episodes and there's some sort of mystery and people start speculating. And it feels like by the end, a lot of things people thought were like clues just end up being mistakes or plot holes or just things that aren't very good. So it's kind of hard to know. It could be that his dad is a robot or his dad, like they're mind wiping people, or like, there could be something at the end that we don't know that is very much informing his dad's performance, or it could just be a bad performance. Like it's hard to know one way or the other without, because we know there's stuff they're hiding from us.
I think the other thing, and I don't like to harp on child actors because they are children.
I do.
I think for the most part, I actually really enjoy, I don't know who plays Neil. I enjoyed his voice performances. I thought he was very genuine. There were times where I thought Wim's actor was a little
flat or too much.
Flat or hammy. There was not
They kind of oscillate. Yeah.
I thought KB was fine for the most part. She's like, it's very like 80s stereotype.
Yep.
Neil's the anxious little nerd.
Yep.
Or just like anxious sidekick.
Yes.
Wim is kind of like the main bombastic, reckless character. You also have Fern, who is mean girl.
Yep.
And then KB is kind of like the sensible one of the group in a way.
Sure.
I thought KB and Neil were fine. Fern was, for the most part, I think okay. There were some times where I was kind of like, okay, I think you're going a little hard on the mean girl act.
Well, I mean, and
it's also her tough. She's trying to be tough.
Yeah, that's not
a bad thing.
That's always the hard balance with having any character that is like putting a performance is what is the level between making this character feel real, making it feel like they're putting up a front.
She's the rebel. That's what.
And
she is.
It's even harder with a child actor, where I think you almost have a benefit with Wim and KB is they seem like slightly less experienced.
Do you mean Neil and KB?
No, Wim. I'm talking about Wim.
Oh, okay.
Is the actors feel slightly less experienced. So it honestly feels like the actors, because they don't fully know how to quote act, they feel a little more authentic as children, Whereas the actress who plays Fern, she's been in more things, so she technically knows how to act more. So it seems like she's acting, which sometimes plays to the character's purpose, which is that there is a performative element to her, like, because she's rebellious because her mom is this government official. But on the other hand, it does make her feel like an actor rather than a child. So they all kind of have their strengths and weaknesses in different areas. And I do hope that they progress as the show get, like, as you learn more about the character. And also, I would assume, like, I think I remember how, like, the movie E.T., which is taking a lot of inspiration from, is shot in sequence, which helps kids, like, maintain their character. So if they somewhat shot this in sequence like that, the actors will hopefully just get better as they spend more time in their characters.
I thought the second episode, which we can get to in a bit, was a little bit better performance-wise.
Yeah, this had more to do. There's just more exciting stuff going on. So I want to finish up my thought about the... As the ship was taking off and the main characters were almost falling out, it is never visually... The integration of both the visual effects and the actors and their performances, it has never really felt like there was an actual danger. It never felt like anything was actually going to happen. But also made me realize potentially an issue with having kids this young is it might limit you on stunts.
Like, what do you mean we can't throw the children off the side of a building onto a mat?
I'm just saying that the actual
stunt... What do you mean child labor laws?
What was occurring there was just so unengaging. I think you benefit from having kids by, I care a little bit more if they get hurt. Because, like, an adult, like, falls and breaks their leg. I'm like, oh, whatever.
Like, ha-ha! No,
but
I'm kidding.
A kid, if that happened to a kid, I think I would really care. So, like, you have an increased level of, like, injury to the children is more impactful. But also, I know you're not going to kill these kids.
Not to make, like, a side tangent to another franchise, but I'm going to. It's like, do you smell that?
No, I do not.
Oh, my gosh. I smell, like, a burnt toast. So I'm either
having
a stroke. I think I also have a neighbor who consistently burns bread.
That's probably it. Then you probably are smelling toast.
Also, it's just sensitive to smells. Along those same lines, like, the different dynamics with, like, child actors and adult actors, I'm going to use, like, Alien Romulus as an example. I know you haven't seen it.
Yes.
But, I mean, I'm going to use a worse film for this. Well, maybe, like, Aliens 2. You want Ripley to live, but when you, like, throw the child in, you're like, oh, gosh. You know, you don't actively want to see children get hurt. And if you do... Do some soul searching, because that's weird. Or it's like, maybe it's a bad comparison, Prometheus. Uh-huh. I did not care if any of those, I don't know. It's just one of those things like, yeah, you know those people are going to die, but like with Alien Romulus, with the cast being teens and young teens, it definitely puts a different air of, oh gosh. Like I remember sitting in the theater, because, you know, I enjoy the Alien movies, but really kind of going, am I going to see, like, a bunch of teenagers eviscerated on screen?
Ooh, yeah.
Because that's...
Yeah. That's interesting.
And spoilers, yes. It's a very different... it's just kind of like a, oh. Okay. There's just some different stakes. Just different...
Well Big done or medium hand. Rare.
Microwaved.
Oh, no.
Or think of it kind. In the Kenobi show. You know, Darth Vader's just running his way through the villagers. And we're like, okay, yeah, whatever. And then he, like, kills a 14-year-old. And you're like, oh, Darth Vader, you're not fun. You know, the joke. Uh-huh. Like, that's not fun anymore. So, or even just the... Probably when people saw Revenge of the Sith for the first time, it's so memed on, the youngling scene. But, like, watching that probably for the first time ever is pretty jarring.
Oh, absolutely.
With the cutaway that Anakin Skywalker is going to kill a bunch of six-year-olds. If that. So, there's definitely, it's, I think having child actors can limit it. And I think there's a balance of, is the danger, like, hammy, or are they, like, actually in real danger? All that to say, that was a long tangent. If I had a nickel, because they get out into space before they jump into hyperspeed, and they see stars for the first time, and they're like, what is that? If I had a nickel for each franchise movie, or each, like, franchise thing I've seen this year, where I've seen basically either a bunch of children or young members of a species meet an old person and see the sky for the first time, I'd have two nickels, one from Skeleton Crew and one from Transformers 1.
That is a great moment. I did not write that down, but the moment they first, I mean, that is one of the more clever parts of this show, is they're revealing information to us that we have no idea that we should even be asking the question.
I think especially when they get out and they're like, are those
dogs? Yeah, they're like, there's more than I thought there would ever be. Like, they're revealing to us, one, these characters have never seen the stars and don't even know how many there are.
Yeah, because they go, are those planets?
Yeah. Like, up to that moment, we have no reason to think there's anything weird about this planet at all.
It's kind of just a little bit of a gut punch right before the credits. Yeah. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, they haven't seen the real sky.
Yeah, it's a very jarring moment, but it's also very well performed by the kids. I think mm-hmm. it's actually, like, it's the first moment you actually kind of connect with the characters. Yeah. And it's a fun, like, this show is called Star Wars. I mean, this franchise, like, these characters are amazed by the stars themselves. The wars are in the
stars.
And it feels very reminiscent of in Force Awakens when Rey goes to the other planet for the first time.
Yeah.
It's quite cool. Another
Force Awakens did that so right. Oh, Rey's all for everything. Chef's kiss.
And then whenever they go to Octu at the end of the, or Octo at the end of the, she has a look that kind of implies the same thing about the water on that planet. That's really nice.
Oh, Rey. We love Rey in this household.
I'm glad we found something good to talk about. I'm going to go to another thing that kind of bothers me that makes me concerned for the rest of the show, which is Neil as a design, which is that particular alien species, the way they've designed him, his face, the practical makeup is not very expressive at all. I was talking about, like, expressiveness of other aliens in this mm-hmm. in this show.
There's a lot of body movement that's kind of neat. Yeah. Really,
and like I was sitting there listening to the voice performance, and it's actually probably the strongest performance in the show so far is Neil's voice, and it made me like sad for the actor. Like, you've hired a very talented young actor
and you hit him behind the CGI mask.
He's wearing this I mean we don't know for sure. I couldn't find anything about whether he's actually the body or not, but either way it's sad. And I think that design's a mistake for a main character, in my opinion. While I think they've done a lot to make the character the most likable character, and I'm glad that he is there and it's a strong performance, it could be even better. That's just my opinion. Moving on to the next episode. We didn't really talk about SM-33 very much. It's not the second episode. Okay. Yeah. So they find a robot.
Nick Frost.
Who is killing it. You know, you would think at some point I would get tired of the comical sidekick robot with a British actor and or famous voice actor. But no, I love it every time. I am such a sucker for these characters.
I definitely looked up Nick Frost expecting him to be in some Transformers show, and he hasn't. It's only a matter of time, Cameron.
Speaking of that, though,
it's only a matter of time.
I have to find it again. The Wolfman, whose name is Brutus, voiced by Fred Tatasciore. And he has multiple other voices. He's just a voice actor.
He's just a voice actor.
He's simply a voice actor. Exclusively a voice actor, it would seem. And he has been a lot of podcast-relevant things. He voices Megatron a lot in video games.
Oh.
He has done a lot of also Star Wars video games. He has voiced Darth Vader in a Lego animated special. He voiced dinosaurs in the Jurassic World Dominion prologue short.
So he's kind of like Frank Welker. They just have him scream.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. He's done various Batman villains and various things, zombie vocals in Army of the Dead. Fun voice actor. He's getting the job done, and he's been in a lot of podcast relevant stuff. So we salute you, sir.
If you'd like to come on the podcast, please let us know.
Absolutely. Nick Frost, famous British comedic actor, killing it with a Cockney accent.
He's SM-33.
Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of like significance to that name?
There is. I saw this on the internet. I did not come up with this my own. So he's like I don't know. He's like, I don't know what it's called when you're second in command on a pirate ship, because it's very obviously a pirate ship as we see.
Oh, shoot. I got it. Okay, I'll let you finish, but I just got it. That's great.
It's like, if you look at it, it's SM-33. Mm-hmm. SME.
Yeah. Like Shmee.
Mr. Shmee.
That's great.
From Peter Pan.
That's phenomenal. I like that a lot. That's a lot of fun.
I could have thought of that on my own, but I can't remember the last time I've seen Peter Pan.
Yeah, fair. Though that is kind of funny because so David Lowery directed the second episode, and he directed Disney's live action Peter Pan and Wendy that came out, which I've not seen, but it is interesting that there's a direct pirate Peter Pan reference in there, and the director worked on that. So yeah, so fun character wants to like kill the kids, and then Fern lies about killing the captain, and so she's the new captain, and so now SM-33 is loyal to Fern. And my favorite detail of SM-33 is that his arms extend. I just think that's really fun. He's like piloting the ship and he's like reaching things. Thought that was fun. He also is missing an eye, and which makes him, I'm now just now realizing, makes him look like more like a pirate.
It's very piratey.
But this little like rat thing keeps jumping in and out of his eye, which is also very fun.
Yeah, and it's not like an earth rat. It is a space rat, and it looks weird. I don't like it.
And so they, so this is actually our first hint that Atten is something of a hidden planet, because
they keep telling him where to go, and he goes, he's like, what?
Now he lists off some other A planets, including one from Andor,
Aldani, which he calls a sulfurous bog planet. Which, if you recognize the name of Aldani, Aldani is the planet Cassian goes to for that first heist. It's that first arc. It's where you get that beautiful scene of that pilgrimage. And so I thought it was interesting. He's like, that's just a sulfurous bog planet. That's my impression of a Cockney accent.
And
I'm curious. I'm like, is it actually boggy? Or you made the comment, Cameron, of, is it sulfurous and boggy now after a mining incident, which the Empire is very fond of.
And I wanted to see if I could find, just to confirm that that was the planet he was talking about, because it's possible he was talking about a different planet. Also, they set up that there's a like a self-destruct button in the
the
deck of the ship.
The whole demolition
button.
Why would you have that?
Yeah, I know, right?
That's like...
So he
it's like having a mechanism that drops a match into your fuel tank or something.
Yeah, I guess it, in absolute worst case scenario. But shouldn't it like be easier to not push? I mean, easier, like it should be harder to push.
I know. If this was a Mandalorian episode, Grogu would have pressed it.
No, Aldani, it's a sulfurous bog world. Yeah, I wonder if maybe the Empire ruined it.
Maybe we just didn't see the sulfurous bog part. And we were in the one pretty part. So they're like, we need to leave. We need to go somewhere. And Robot and Smee, I'm just gonna call him Smee. It's like, I can't get you there, but I can get you a place where you can get directions. And they're like, okay, take us. And he takes them to a place called Port Borga, which is not a ship station. It's a pirate. It's a port. I think Port Borga sounds like Tortuga from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, absolutely.
And probably in real life, I guess. I don't know. Is Tortuga a real place? I should have looked that up. Someone correct me.
And so they just get
it
a lot
is a
of
real place.
So they just kind of spend some time exploring around
the port, which is
No, yeah, you got it.
Not a place for children. And
it's kind of amazing they don't get nabbed immediately.
I know. There's one thing to note is Wim has his lunch money on him, which are a bunch of thin golden credits. And they are bright gold. And if you notice, they are very different from the New Republic credit that is found at the beginning of the first episode by the pirates. That one is square. So they pay the ferryman, and the ferryman is super excited. He's a little rat creature who's very excited when he's paid and immediately runs away, which is kind of like, huh, okay. So they immediately, the boys and girls immediately get, you know, separated. You know, what else do you do in a kid's movie? Mm-hmm. And the girls are kind of holding their own, and they actually get pulled us. They pass a building and they're like, we should not go in there. They get, because it's a brothel. That's what it is. It's a brothel. It's very obvious. One of the, I don't know, she's not one of the, she's a humanoid. She follows them and she kind of grabs them and she's like, what are you doing here? That you, I was on, I liked her. I was like, good on you for like grabbing these two young girls and yeah. kind of being like, why are you at this pirate port? And they're like, we're from Atten. And she, this is our first hint. She goes, you're going to have to come up with something better than that. And it's kind of like, huh, okay. That's, you know, the second mention that no one knows what Atten is. We cut back to the boys and they have decided to get food. And Wim pays with this gold credit.
Mm-hmm.
And it immediately catches the attention of everyone around him. And I think the cook asks, where did you get this Old Republic credit?
Mm-hmm.
And immediately starts trying to scam him. He's like, this yep. actually isn't enough, blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. you can tell it's obviously very valuable. And I think it's interesting that he said Old Republic. So there's, yeah. There's a couple of Old Republics it could be. That could be like pre-Empire, kind of prequel yeah, that's Republic. What I was thinking. Or like,
yeah.
even like, I don't know if it'd be even before then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not current currency. And so, you know, they're all trying to kind of scam poor Wim. And he causes a fire in the kitchen and runs away. And I totally forgot to say before that. Before it kind of gets to the climax, they ask him where they're from after they see the money. Goes, Atten. And they all laugh at them. And that's where it's yep. first revealed, that treasure planet. Or, mm-hmm. you know, that mythical treasure planet. And the kids are confused because it's all they've known. They throw soup over the cook to get away because they're basically going to try to rob these kids. They run away. Chaos ensues. The kids all meet up again.
And they get chased by Urkel.
Yeah.
I knew I recognized that actor.
That was Urkel?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So they get chased by all the pirates and they kind of get cornered.
And this is the same pirates from the beginning of the show.
Yes, it is the same pirates from the beginning. I'm sorry, I should have said that. You kind of start to see them peppered throughout the scenes prior. And then SM-33 shows up and wipes the floor with everyone.
Yeah, I like that. I thought that maybe, because obviously anytime anything pretty childish like this builds something up, either it's going to subvert in one way or the other. They're building up the scene. And I was thinking they were building up for us to assume this is an invincible robot. He's going to kick butt and he's going to like mm-hmm. collapse. But no, he actually does just take him out. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that.
I think I was actually very intrigued because he packs quite a punch. But his main, he's got two circles, like little tiny shields on his arm that deflect blaster shots. Mm-hmm. But they are also hot.
Oh, because yeah.
He pins a guy against the wall, presses it up, and it burns mm-hmm. him, which is horrible. So they are working to get back to the ship, trying to pay the ferryman, and then Brutus shows up and mm-hmm. absolutely just, like, wrecks SM-33 with a single shot. Because Urkel snitched on him. Gosh.
Did I do that?
Yes. So the kids get, taken prisoner by the pirates because those kids are pretty interesting. They are apparently, at least one of them is filthy rich somehow. And they keep saying they're from this mythical planet that no one's ever been able to find that's full of treasure. So they get put in the brig. Kids are trying to convince the little rat that lived in SM-33's head to help them because Neil picked him up and kept him. And then our mysterious friend Jude Law is revealed and he seemingly uses the force to pick up the key. and pull it in. And all he asks is that he takes them with him.
Mm-hmm. What I like about this moment is instead of just like CGIing a key just hovering over to them, it seems like they did it practically.
It did, because it wasn't super smooth. It was just kind of like...
Exactly. Or at the very least, they went through the effort to make it look practical, even if it was purely CGI, which makes it feel real. Like, that's a great touch.
Which is interesting, because it wasn't so smooth and seamless, it makes me wonder if it was actually the Force, or if he's like...
Or
if he's got something up his sleeve, quite literally, to get it. I don't know. Maybe he's just... Maybe he is force sensitive, and just the way that he's able to just get by, he doesn't really have like formal training.
That's my guess.
He's a liar.
I am curious to figure out. Jude Law, one of my favorite actors. He's a disgraced pirate captain, regardless, which is a great character type. He's gonna have to deal with these kids. Like, I just look forward to that. Like, he's gonna bring up the average level of acting. He's gonna bounce off these kids well. They're gonna have a lot to like. They're gonna get a lot out of the dynamic
Star
of the
Wars
show
with another gruff, unwitting man adopting a child.
Exactly, the show's dynamic already improved dramatically with the robot. You add Jude Law in there; it's a great crew, and I think that we're gonna have a lot of fun interactions. I hope we don't get a lot of like. I think one of the biggest mistakes things make with a group is they split them up. Quit doing that.
Yeah.
The whole reason this thing exists is for group dynamic. Don't split them up. I mean, obviously, for like a really strong reason of I want these two characters to spend time together, but like that was always the worst episode of The Bad Batch. It always frustrates me to heck about sequels. It's annoying in Acolyte. So keep this crew together, and I think it will go really strong. Obviously, they've already made it, so like me giving advice to this multi-billion-dollar company means nothing.
I think they're probably kind of sweating a little bit after. I'm curious about their narrative storytelling with Acolyte seemingly to expect a second season, and then this didn't get, obviously didn't get it.
It is kind of funny. Every time they get too far from what, quote-unquote, fans want, every time they kind of crash... popularity wise they come back with something that's way more throwbacky. It's kind of what happened with like the Mandalorian. I feel like Bad Batch kind of helped with that because it was throwback to cartoons. This kind of like coming after the Acolyte feels very similar in vain. Like this is so like not in a bad way, this is safe. Like I think it's safe in its concept. I think it's great in its execution. I think this is being executed very well.
And I think one of the things that I'm very intrigued about is I think, you look at it and you're like, skeleton crew pirates. It's kind of Pirates of the Caribbean. For me watching, I love the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, 1 through 3 specifically. Mwah. Perfect trilogy. I'm not, and this isn't a bad thing. If you're going, for me personally, if you're going and being like, yep, this is probably just going to be like Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm not getting that. I am definitely getting a little bit more of the Goonies vibes, which is how it was described when I first heard people talking about it. But I'm also really getting Treasure Planet vibes.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the realm it seems to be leaning into. And I'm actually super excited for that.
I totally agree.
Treasure Planet is a top tier film, even though it scared me as a child. Look, that black hole scene like kind of traumatized me.
Yeah, and it also kind of reminds me a bit of this great 80s movie called Time Bandits, which is about this young British boy who hates his life, boring British suburban life.
Average
British. This group of, they call them in the movie is dwarves. It's little people who are time travelers, break through his room and take him. And they go on miscellaneous adventures throughout the universe. And it's very 80s, if you know, directed by Terry Gilliam, famous for Monty Python stuff and, Brazil and Baron von Munchausen. Very highly stylized. So the idea of, like, a young kid who's unsatisfied with his very standard, mundane life, going on this adventure through space and
spice,
encountering pirates and dangerous things and... very strong visual style. It also reminds me of that. So, whereas I think it would be very easy to get... I feel like we've been in... Well, even by time Stranger Things came out in 2016. The 80s thing had been going for a while. So
I'm so glad there's no Stranger Things kids in this show.
It feels like we are 15 years into this obsession with the 80s. And it could get old real fast. But that is where Star Wars came from, though. So it is. I think Star Wars can get away with it because it is fundamental to the DNA of this franchise. Mm-hmm. And they've sprinkled it in. They've pulled it in pieces, but this feels like the first Star Wars thing to be like really firmly grant, and at least in a specific kind of 80s, which is like the kid adventure.
Oh, honestly, like I thought the first episode of the two is a little weaker. The whole scene of him getting up, getting ready for school and like running to the school bus, that felt like straight out of an 80s movie.
Mm-hmm.
From the camera angles.
Yeah. I'm glad that we kind of just got through that.
Mm-hmm. I would have been bummed if they just released the first episode. I think it would have been a little...
Or if that went beyond the first episode. I think it was a great idea to leave that planet. Don't super look forward to incoming scenes of like just the dad dealing with something. Yeah, like I'm not that interested in whatever that's going to be. I think what will save that is if there's a really good payoff for whatever the mystery is on that planet. And it doesn't even have to be, I think people might really want it to be a big, like, universe-relevant mystery. Like, I don't even know what it would be.
I don't know. I'm okay with it staying small.
No, yeah, absolutely. But it just needs to be interesting and plot-relevant.
Not to talk about Andor again, but I'm going to talk about Andor again. I really liked, so Andor spanned across multiple planets, yes. But it was a small, fairly consistent cast. And that's what worked. Is it building into something big? Yeah, it's going to go straight into Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked because it didn't try to have all the characters everywhere at once crossing paths with Darth Vader. I don't know. You know. It doesn't always have to tie back, I don't think, to the Skywalker saga.
Mm-hmm.
It can be its own thing.
This, I'm looking at some comments on Reddit, and this is saying that, I mean, it's a small detail, but it's interesting. Neil's shields did not heat themselves up. It was absorbing the heat from the blaster fire.
I wonder that.
That's really clever. I actually like that a lot. Fun show. Decent lead performances. Good adult performances. Great look. Great set work and costuming and effects. And
it's got potential.
General environment. This is the kind of show I would definitely not mind each episode having its own little adventure.
Yes.
Because that feels very piratey. That feels very, you know, kids adventure. I almost don't want an overarching plot. I am totally fine with these kids. I mean, it's the absolute classic television plot of just trying to get home.
Yes.
That's great for me. And
that's actually one thing I really like. They're not trying to actually get out and get somewhere. They are trying to get home.
Yeah.
That's what I actually like. Because I was really kind of wondering, like, I know like young kids can have big aspirations for travel. I think my concern was, how is Jude Law going to kidnap them? Because that was kind of how it felt in the trailer. Yeah. But I'm like, they're just trying to get home. I like that. And I also like the idea that now people will be seeking out these kids to find this lost planet too. That's cool. Instead of them trying to find
But like planet. Wim clearly does not want to go home. Wim wants to go on an adventure. So I feel like oftentimes shows really have to contrive the purpose for the like detours. I feel like Wim is going to convince the other kids and they're going to be like, oh, actually, maybe we don't want to go home yet. Maybe we do want to. And I think Jude Law's going to be like, hey, you kids want to go on an adventure? You want to go look for treasure? Like, he's going to convince them instead of having like hijack them.
We did forget the most important thing that we saw in episode one.
I think I know what you're going to say.
So Neil has three younger siblings, toddlers. Apparently it's one and it's like twins and then a set of one. If you'd asked me, I thought they were triplets. They are watching a show and it is the same show from the holiday special, which is just wild to see in nature.
Yeah, it's a really terrible circus on hologram. Yeah,
I was like, ugh.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, look it up. Watch JonTron's video on it.
It really gave Broadway Cats energy.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
Well, that's a really good transition into our famous segment. You had a great quote. So
I talk a lot during stuff, so.
I want to forget her name. Fern is really into her speeder bike. And this other person pulls up and starts like making fun of her for her being broken and she's going to lose a race or something. And it's a 16-year-old. And you went, is that a 16-year-old beefing with 11-year-olds? That's a moment right there. Moment for me was...
kind of looked a little bit like that one dude from Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. The rocker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's also probably just most young 80s teenagers.
I think this is kind of explained later. So there's these various like robots that are like just around the school, mm-hmm. making sure the kids get to class and everything. And it felt like they were only from the school. Mm-hmm. But then on his way to school, so just to kind of set things up, Wim misses the bus. He rides his bike through a shortcut. He crashes it. And one of these robots finds him. Mm-hmm. I think now we know that these robots are everywhere.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I was like, how? How did the, why is this robot in the woods? Small thing, maybe, but it bothered me.
Maybe they notice when kids are truant.
They sent them searching.
Yeah.
Fern. Wim is talking to Fern about her bike and says that it's totally wizard, which is the very, very cringy kind of phrase that young Anakin uses in Phantom Menace. I think Urkel being in this at all is a moment. I feel like I had one more. What do you got?
I did make a joke that this is our first canonized Star Wars furry with Brutus.
You said, oh no, Disney's gone woke. They're catering to furries. My actual moment.
That is a joke, by the way.
The voice of the teacher robot is horribly grating.
Oh, yeah.
We are in the future of for Star Wars. Like, this is like...
is it the future if it's in a galaxy?
They've had robots and spaceships and hyperspace travel and incredibly advanced artificial intelligence for thousands of years. And yet the robots' voices that teach the children are... They're so crackly and they're talking like this. They're talking to the children. And... It's horrible. It's really, really horrible. So I think they should maybe get that looked at. That's all I think I got for it. One last note. Megan will really appreciate this. The music for this, composed by Mr. Giacchino, not Michael, his son Mick Giacchino, composed the music for this, who previously... seems like he just kind of picks up wherever his dad left off. He's currently doing the DC Comics Penguin show, which is a direct spinoff of the Batman from 2022, which was
such a good movie.
Which was Michael Giacchino. And I'm trying to think of if he's done anything else significant. He's done various other Disney Plus stuff like Muppets Mayhem, Zootopia Plus, some short films. So he's kind of at the beginning of his career. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool that he's getting started doing Star Wars stuff. And this is, I mean, two major streaming shows in 1 year. Pretty cool.
Star Wars.
And all right, that is truly my last note. Meme Minute?
Yeah.
Meme Minute. But it's longer than a minute, and we've been slowly getting closer to actually doing a minute. Rachel, what do you got?
I have three videos and five memes.
All right, let's do it.
This is TikTok. If you are ever on the internet this summer, there's obviously, if you saw Inside Out 2, they talk about the new emotions.
Starscream. I like it. I like it a lot.
It is the new motion meme with G1 Starscream. It's just the scream. I relate to that a little bit too hard.
I'm here for it. I love it. What else you got?
Oh my gosh. So this is the... I saved this TikTok to my phone because I thought it was so funny. So, one thing that's very important to note for context for this is Brian Tyree Henry, who voiced Megatron in Transformers 1, also voices Miles Morales' dad in Spider-Verse.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, this is a clip from Across the Spider-Verse.
And I hate that he's not being honest with me.
Maybe he's scared to talk to you.
Why would anyone be scared to talk to me? The
AIDS are crying. And this is like a conversation between Miles and his dad, and it's this overlaid clip from Transformers. And I just
that's good. That's good.
I get such a laugh out of it.
I love it.
Very amused. This has and this last one that I have has it has no caption, just
it's a cat sitting on his back haunches with his claws up, and he's got a bit of a Godzilla look to him.
And there is a very obviously red arrow pointing to a PNG of Godzilla in the same pose. So good. All right, now it's just memes. You got
just memes. I have no memes this
week. Oh, I'm
carrying
meme minute this week.
If I don't see them, if I don't find them, I got no memes. I'm meme poor.
It's just a song. No, it's not just a song. And it's Anakin. It's Anakin's betrayal.
Nice.
Revenge of the Sith. Which was actually surprisingly not.
Okay, do you know what? After seeing that album art, I'm going to go on a tangent here. I'm going to use my meme minute moment to talk about not a meme, but something that frustrates the crap out of me is that different versions of the Star Wars soundtrack have different tracks and they have different versions on different streaming platforms. So I can't always find the exact song that I want, or it's under a different name. It's so bizarre to me.
Is this where Anakin's betrayal is also Anakin's dark deeds?
No, not that. It's more with the original trilogy. There's just different versions. Mm. Like it's like they'll like sometimes combine different tracks or have them as different tracks separately, or they'll rename them, or they'll like put three tracks together, or they won't even have certain tracks on there. It just, I feel like there needs to be like one universal version. First off, don't combine them. I don't need different tracks from different scenes to be one track on there. Keep them separate. Keep their names consistent. Don't not have tracks. Give me as many tracks as you have. I don't know. It's just super annoying. So, complain minute, more
thank
like.
You, thank you for sharing your TED Talk.
Complainment? Anyways.
Shout out to Cool Imperial Designs from Star Wars spinoffs. Gotta be one of my favorite genders. It's just a bunch of examples of
I want to see the designs. Yeah, because, the like various stormtroopers. So you got the shore trooper. Then you've got the like snow trooper from Solo, which is the kind of a variant of the shore trooper from Rogue One.
Dark trooper from Rogue One, whatever he's called.
Yeah. This has got to be. Maybe it's not. Who is this?
That's not Phasma.
I thought it was Phasma at first.
I think those are the stormtroopers from Solo.
That would make sense. That's definitely what this is. Yeah, the like mud troopers or whatever they are. Ugh. Are these the Mandalorian troopers?
I don't know. Maybe.
Good look though, and these are like
those are the tank troopers.
Yeah, just good looks. They make good toys, don't they?
I feel attacked by that statement. I don't know what you're talking about. Where you can visually see the hover tank trooper on my shelf, Cameron.
Oh yes.
You seen Chicken Run?
Have I seen Chicken Run? Yes, of course.
Okay, I actually haven't, but I know the means. We're going back in time to the first Cybertronians to take their transformation cocks out of their chests.
Chicken Run. That's if I had to guess, it's heavily edited.
It's that meme from the we're going back to the first Thanksgiving to take turkeys off the menu.
It's Freebird.
Sorry.
Look, they're turkeys.
Too many animated films.
That is a 2010 CGI animated movie, whereas Run is about chickens and it's stop motion.
Oh.
It's claymation and it's from 2000. Yes. Different movies.
I'm sorry. So there are a lot of animated bird films. I'm not surprised that you're an expert on them.
I hate you.
But
hate
it is
you so much.
The meme is a Sentinel Prime meme from Transformers 1. So
that's good. That's good. That's a good joke.
Everything is
Well, see, now I want to know what Free Bird is about. Is that what Free Birds is about? Do they travel back in time to the first Thanksgiving in Free Birds? Because if that's what the movie's about, I think this is an underrated classic.
Isn't it an allegory for, like, concentration camps?
What the heck is this movie about?
I'm thinking Chicken Run.
You are thinking Chicken Run. Chicken Run is kind of about concentration camps. Chicken Run is a very soft remake of The Great Escape, which is about a POW camp from World War II where they put all of the soldiers who kept us. It was not concentration camps. They're not Jewish. British and American soldiers. It's a POW camp, which is slightly better.
I'm getting schooled on bird movies. Caleb, I hope you're enjoying this.
Okay. This is going to get insane. So Free Birds is a 2013 animated film. Pardoned by the president, a lucky turkey, Owen Wilson, named Reggie, gets to live a carefree lifestyle until fellow fowl Jake, Woody Harrelson, recruits him for a history-changing mission. Jake and Reggie travel back in time to the year 1621, just before the first Thanksgiving. The plan? Prevent all turkeys from ever becoming holiday dinners. Unfortunately, the two birds encounter colonist Miles Standish, out to capture feathered birds for the hungry pilgrims. This movie's been out for 10 years. How did I not know that's the plot of Free Birds? That sounds incredible. That sounds so good. This should have been last week's episode.
We're going to have to watch something between Skeleton Crew and Andor season 2.
Next year, babe. Wow. I am blown away. How have I never heard that? There's so many memes about what was the Will Smith animated one where he's a spies in disguise, where he gets turned into a pigeon. Everyone knew that, but that was how did we all know what that movie was about, but none of us knew what Free Birds
is about? Are we gonna do a bird theme movie?
Oh damn it. I did retract all Athena burned the whole episode.
She's too busy eating. This is one of those everything is about blank if you're blank enough. And so it's just scratched out. Everything is about Transformers if you're delusional enough. And the last one. Are you ready for this
one? I'm going back to Free Bird. The director of Free Bird directed Horton Hears a Who, which is pretty predictable, and the DC Comics Western Jonah Hex. That is all. And two commercials for Off. He's credited. It's got Jack Black in it.
Okay.
I'm starting to think maybe it's.
It's technically podcast.
It's related. Called the commercial. Whatever this is called Off Over Our Heads and Meet Your God. What does that mean? We're going down this rabbit hole.
Bird hole.
For his 59th birthday, singer Keith Morris had one wish: to go skydiving with his band Off.
Well, this is 7 minutes. So this has nothing to do with the brand of bug spray. So I was wrong about that. This makes it very less interesting for me. Anyways.
I have one more meme.
Meme. Show me your meme.
This is the last one.
Ah, jeez. I'll let you explain that. I refuse.
How can I explain it? How can I find the words?
It's the Weezer album. Weezer. I think it's just Weezer.
I'm so upset that you stole that from me. So yeah, it is the Weezer meme, but it is just the copy and pasted Jet Decepticons, which are called Seekers, and they're all in the blue background.
Good. No, actually not good. Bad. Terrible. Athena, burn this whole episode. This is going to be a lost episode. Thank you for watching us for episode something. Episode nice. 69. Next week, episode 70. With the next episode of
enough to run for president.
Skeleton Crew.
Two episodes.
Oh, also, I forgot. I genuinely forgot.
Two episodes of Skeleton Crew.
Oh, you're right. Two episodes next. Yeah, episode 3 and 4. We 23 days ago, we got a new comment from Caleb on Spotify. Gosh.
Which one? The one we know or the one that made our music?
Well, we know both of them. The one who's been a guest on the pod.
I'm so sorry.
He commented on our Avatar episode. I'm sure they'll get to the Godzilla prequel comic next episode. We forgot to talk about it. Next time, we'll talk about Godzilla prequel comic. We had to talk about your shoes. Shoes. Next time, my shoes.
You don't wear shoes.
Oh, I guess no episode next time then. As always, thank you to the other Caleb Jacoby, for our intro and outro music. Props to Rachel for our artwork and Twitter account.
Props to Cameron for our Facebook and our Instagram account.
Props to Athena, our editor, who is currently flopped over on the ground doing nothing.
No, she's doing something.
Oh, she's playing with a stick. Yeah, druggie. give us
bold considering your cat.
Let us know what you think about Skeleton Crew. Let us know if you've seen Free Birds, if we should see it.
Let us know if we should do a bird-themed
couple episodes. I refuse. Let us know about your Spotify or Apple Music Wrapped or whatever. Let us know what your top things were for the year. Give us some recommendations. This is Cameron and Rachel signing off saying, you didn't even catch it, but the two skeletons on the ship were actually an Uncle Owen Amperu cameo. Good night, everyone.